Okay, people, fantasy draft season is over, and you, Brewski, 150 your way to a hell of a team. The season is here, and Fantasy Pass is still the best deal in the industry at just $4.99 a month. And now that we're into the regular season, there's zero commitment. Sign up for 1 month for just $5. If you don't like it, you can cancel it. We know you'll love it. You'll say you'll keep it, but anyways, it's nice to have options in life. The Fantasy Pass has everything you need to dominate all year long. Updating projections, new fantasy appraiser tools, schedule and streaming charts, pickups, drops, and our newest and coolest feature, the Hoop Ball Discord server, where you can hang out with all our Hoop Ball pros, including myself, around the clock, to get one-on-one help with your team. So please do check it out. Head to hoop-ball.com and click on the Fantasy Pass ad just below the main media wall and get the plug for your success for the fantasy basketball season.
The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
Plays it into Trey. 2 seconds wide. Trey's floater. Good! 3.1! And the Hawks are going to win this game. Shot clock at 5. It's poked away. Cam comes up with it and slips it. Came up shy. Another lob. Collins up high. Picked up by Tatum. Slaps in. Can't get it. Kevin lets it fly. Swish!
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah! Hello and welcome back to Hoop Ball Hawks, the show here on the Hoop Ball Network that is taking flight, where we cover everything regarding the Atlanta Hawks. I'm your host, Brad Harden, recording live from Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm here today with my friend, Alan Strokey, to talk over the last 3 games in this current 10-game stint in which the Atlanta Hawks have lost 4 of their last 5 games and 8 of their last 10. Coaching, defense, execution, slow starts, late collapses, and everything in between. We're going to cover all of this episode, including some interesting takes going forward for this Hawks team after this plug for my bookie. If you like losing money, turn this off right now. But if you love free bands, just like Super Future, then keep listening. Sports betting is getting huge across the nation, and all of my homies love to bet on games. There are a bunch of sites out there for sports betting, but all of my homies love MyBookie. Why? Because it's so easy to use. And since y'all my homies too, I'ma plug you. All my homies listening right now can sign up for MyBookie with the promo code HOOPBALL to unlock a 100% deposit match bonus. 100%, just like an A+ in school. Hopefully you got them, but if not, this your chance to get 100%. You like playing blackjack? There are some very fun and free blackjack tournaments, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. There is so much that you can do on MyBookie, and the best thing is that no cash is required to enter, and you can win up to $100 in daily challenges and up to $1,000 in weekly tournaments. So you want a chance at free cash money? Then again, my homies, sign up with the promo code HOOPBALL to unlock a 100% deposit match bonus and try to score some, in the words of Future, like I said earlier, free band. All right, and we are back. As I said before the break, the Hawks are trending down. But who's not trending down is my friend, Alan Strokey, who is on the podcast today to talk through the struggles for the Hawks. First off, Alan, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty well, Brad. Thanks for having me on. It's been a minute since I was last on with you, and now I'm happy to be back here. And I just want to quickly just let the listeners know that your host here, Brad, the man is a scouting wizard. I wanted to just say, Your guy, Skylar Mays, man, you were the first person to be as hyped on him as you were when we did our offseason pod. You went on like, but you did a whole 5 minutes on Skylar Mays and like the type of player that you saw in him. And this past month, he's been one of the few bright spots on this team. He is absolutely, he looks like a player off the bench right now. He's getting more run than Onyeka Okongwu right now.
I didn't want to, I appreciate you bringing that up because I've tweeted it out. You know, I haven't got no likes or retweets from it, so that's okay. Listeners, you don't have to retweet or like everything I say.
I disagree with that. You should. Everything.
I appreciate that support, but I definitely didn't want it to seem like I was just, it was a bias because I was a former Louisiana resident, huge LSU fan, and I didn't want it to be like, oh, that's my bias that he played on my favorite collegiate basketball team, and now he's here in Atlanta. That's why I thought he was going to do great. I truly saw some things that he could benefit this team, and I'm really glad that in the short minutes that he has gotten, and he's made most of his minutes, and I thought that he could have this potential impact because of him being a four-year player, not having obviously the summer league, the long camp to really get adjusted to the NBA, and that he knows what he's good at and he knows what he can't do. And so that's what you're seeing, what Hawks fans are seeing from him is the same things I saw at LSU and what he grew into as a player in his 4 years. So thank you for bringing that up, Alan. That's why you're my friend. I appreciate that, man.
I mean, look, you put him on the scene. Like, watching him in last night's Celtics game, his limited minutes, but you can tell that even for a rookie, he's polished. You know, he makes the smart play. He doesn't ever try to overextend himself. I mean, he's been an incredibly efficient shooter over the month, but I saw he had some nice passes last game. It's nice to see him taking advantage of the opportunities that are definitely open in the Hawks backcourt off the bench. I mean, there's plenty of role for him to continue to grow. And again, he's not playing that much after, you know, I mean, he had that huge game where he went for 20 points in like 20 minutes. But ever since then, man, he's starting to get, he's establishing himself, and it's just really nice to see. And yeah, no, all the notes that you guys can go take a look at that pod that we recorded in the offseason. You just fast forward to Brad's just, I knew it wasn't a bias. It was just like, you watched him, you knew his game. And I think that you hit it to a T.
Yeah, and hopefully he can just continue to grow into that. I said that if he got clock, he could have maybe a Jalen Brunson type impact. Not dominate games, but just be really solid off the bench and be more mature than a lot of other rookies coming into the game. Because what we're seeing is like a product of the work that he and the struggles that he had to go through LSU, learning shot selection, learning to play the point guard position, the combo guard position, when to take matters into his own hands and when to get other people involved. And translating on a defensive end, going for steals. He learned all that in his times and struggles at LSU, playing the combo guard position. And he's a Baton Rouge product, went to ULAB, which is LSU's high school, and you know, won some titles there before going out to Vegas and playing a year at a prep school out there. But just a product of his work, and he was a 3.9 student. Could have been a doctor, but changed majors, obviously, and focused on, you know, burning nets and playing the game of basketball. So we're really happy to have him in Atlanta. And let's hope to see him just continue to provide really good minutes off the bench with Rondo missing every other game and not being the Rondo that we've been hoping to see. And Goodwin has been providing good minutes. But when you don't have Dunn, you're going to need somebody else in that backcourt to step up. And I'm glad that Skylar Mays is doing that right now.
Yeah, I wanted to start us off on a positive on this podcast, and it might say a little bit that we have to dig as deep as Skylar Mays at the moment to get that positive start, but he absolutely is, and I'm excited to watch him play. Elsewhere, though, it's been a struggle, to put it mildly.
It's, since the start of the month of February, it's been tough to get wins for Atlanta. I spoke about how, and Alan spoke to as well preseason about after the game against the Wizards, the end of January, February, when they had their first game against the Lakers through the month of February was going to be a crucial and a very tough stretch as far as the competition that they are playing in reference to the Hawks. And like we said, we mentioned the Lakers, Dallas twice, Utah, who is right now arguably the best team in the NBA right now, Toronto, who's been playing a lot better. San Antonio, who's been surprising a lot of teams this year. Indiana looks good under their first-year head coach. And then we just had the two-game stretch with Boston. And they still have a game tomorrow with the Denver Nuggets, who we're going to talk about a little bit later. Boston again, Miami twice, OKC, who's been surprising team. So this first
half. They'll definitely out-hustle us if you let them. That Thunder team is not going away.
Yeah, they play hard every single game. And like I said before, the energy that they bring into games and, you know, not sustaining it for the entire 48 minutes that you want them to on the court. I mean, we talk about Boston last night, the horrendous second quarter. You talk about the fourth quarter collapses we've seen with Dallas twice. We've seen with the Knicks the other night. And we're going to have to bring that energy with all these teams, especially Miami as well. You got to play them twice in South Beach. You can't have any hangover days going out to, you know, Wet Willie's on Ocean Drive.
And, Wet Willie's is dangerous, by the way.
Yeah, it is very dangerous.
They pack a lot in those slushies. You do not expect it, but God, I mean, that is with all that sugar too. It is not a fun morning after.
And hopefully, you know, all that sugar, you know, we bring that on the court. We bring that energy on the court. We want something sweet on the court. Don't worry about what's sweet off the court in Miami, because there's a lot to be desired in Miami that can get you distracted. But we're going to have to focus. We're going to have to tighten up with this first half of the schedule coming to a close. And me personally, the Hawks are off from where I thought they would be at this point. There's a lot of winnable games that they have lost and so many issues for this team with injuries, poor coaching, lack of execution on the players' part, poor shooting, turnovers. As I said before, inconsistent energy given and sustained throughout the entirety of NBA games. And we're going to talk a little bit about the split with Boston, which I'm not that upset about because Boston is a top five team in the East. I mean, we won the first game when they had Kemba, Tice, and Smart out. They took care of business as far as the Hawks and really snapped that losing streak that they had going into that game in Boston. And then they got Kemba back. They got Tice back. And Boston responded early in the game last night to, you know, to really get out to a lead. And then the Hawks try to make it interesting and come back in the game. So it was a very valiant effort to fall short 11 on the road to a good Boston Celtics team. But as far as the two-game stretch without Lloyd Pierce, what were your takeaways from the Boston series, Alan?
So, I mean, like you said, split it really in any against any team, splitting these two games baseball style series that we've been seeing in the NBA this year is pretty commonplace for most teams. You usually see one team get the first win, and then the team that lost comes back a little harder the second night, both from, like, you know, wanting to get one back, better game plan. It's more, I mean, they're fun. I really like these
two. I do too.
Yeah, I think that's something that the NBA, I mean, just logically speaking, like, you know, we all know how they want to cut down on travel and stuff. I think that they should implement that well beyond COVID. I think it's been a plus for the schedule this year. But yeah, no, the first win in Boston, what was that, Wednesday night? It was good. I mean, they played with effort. They, like you, we were talking a little bit off air, and you accurately put it. They honed in on Jaylen Brown primarily. You know, he's been their guy this season, who has been, I mean, he's been like red hot from pretty much everywhere on the floor. Jason Tatum still kind of working his way back since he, you know, he was diagnosed with COVID, you know, about a month ago. And he actually had some comments earlier this week how he's still struggling at times to like, you know, he gets fatigued a little easier. And, you know, he's still kind of working his way back into game shape. But without Kemba in that game, and with Tatum's shot still being pretty off, I think the Hawks correctly honed in on Jaylen Brown, that they did a good job keeping Tristan Thompson and Robert Williams off the boards. And, you know, obviously Trae Young was just, he was phenomenal. I mean, he was engaged and he was, the shots were clicking. And everyone, I think that there was a jovial sort of atmosphere among the team. Like, it was just nice to get a win. And then last night, you know, Kemba being back was a huge factor. Obviously, he locked Trae down for in that first half. And, not even that, but he was going after Trae on the other side of things. I mean, he was just, that might have been the best game that Kemba's played this whole season. And he had a gigantic impact keeping the Celtics in the game. Robert Williams was huge. Daniel Tice was back for that one, too. Those guys were killing us in the interior, more so Williams in the first half and then Tice in that fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, as a whole, though, the team was pretty much playing the same way that they had like stylistically in their other games in February, their other games on the season. And at least speaking to the differences between a Lloyd Pierce coached team and a Nate McMillan coached team, I felt that the rotations were very, very similar, particularly those bench units where you're rolling with lineups of like Brandon Goodwin, Tony Snell, Solomon Hill, Danilo Gallinari, and Bruno Fernando. You know, he was rolling with those. I know that that's been a lineup that's been often criticized just because there's no really no offensive production anywhere. I know people have been getting on Lloyd's case about those kind of lineups. We still saw them last night in the game previously under Nate McMillan. I mean, I thought that McMillan had some we saw some of his defensive what would you call it? Like his we saw some specialties out of him. We saw some interesting mix of some 2-3 zone in that fourth quarter trying to make a comeback. So like you could tell that there was like he was experimenting a little bit, but frankly, I thought that the team looked pretty much the same in how they in terms of how they played. Did you see it that way?
I agree. I thought in the huddles the team looked a little more engaged than when LP is at the helm. But as far as how they played, and Trae Young spoke to it, a lot of people were like, okay, especially after the win versus the Celtics the other day on Wednesday, that they said, oh, like nothing changed. Because I think he kind of knew what the reporter was trying to get out of him to see if there was a huge difference between McMillan and Lloyd Pierce to try to start a narrative like, uh-oh, like what we kind of foresaw when they brought in Nate McMillan, you know, he's right on LP's heels and going to force LP out. So I definitely think that it points to that as much as because you're like you spoke to the rotations. You have to play with who is available. And I know fans complain about rotations, but when you don't have a full deck and you still got Bogey out, who was going to be a big fixture with this team this year. You're going to have to roll with who you got to roll with. So in that regard, rotations wise, people are going to see, okay, that is just a personnel thing. That is injury things. And as far as the energy that they come out with and some of the lack of execution, those are on the players. That is a player thing. So I think we're seeing things that, okay, there's definitely blame on the players that a lot of people are kind of trying to just place on Lloyd Pierce. But like I said, Lloyd Pierce definitely still has some blame in this as well. But I really do think that they kind of took to Nate McMillan a little bit better as far as, you know, when they got down, how they fought back in this game and trying the different things defensively earlier before it got too late in the game to really actually give themselves a chance to get it back to single digits down the stretch before obviously Boston closed out, being a team that has continuities, been together several years and a little bit, you know, older players as far as, you know, their young core compared to here in Atlanta. So we saw those things play out, and it was like a playoff type atmosphere. Like you said, the game one and they responded game two, and the rubber matches in Wednesday here in Atlanta. They have the rubber match against the Celtics to kind of be that game three to see who's going to win the season series. So as much as we want to say, oh, LP gone was a big factor in this, there's still some things that we can point out to say, okay, this is players thing. This is an execution thing. This is a growth and maturity type thing that we still got to work through. And like last night, you can't shoot poorly if you're Herder, if you're Reddish. Mm-hmm. And I forgot the third player on the stack. Because at one point, I think three players outside of, you know, the top players for the Hawks, or I think Collins was in that. They were over.
Collins couldn't hit a shot last night.
Yeah. He was, I think, 3-for-13 last night to end the game. And at one point, all three of them combined were 0-for-18 throughout the first half to start the game. So you got to get more out of those players. And you'll speak to who they're really missing, and a lot of Hawks fans are missing. You'll speak to that a little bit later, but
yeah,
we just got to just get some consistent production out of the players outside of Trae Young and Capella, who's been really consistent in his stretch. And with, you know, Mr. Hunter being out, who was Mr. Consistent, that third guy, you got to count on Collins. You got to count on Reddish. You got to count on Herder. And those are the three players who really lacked last night, that if we could have got anything more out of them, we could have possibly won that game as well last night in Boston.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I mean, like, in the general conversation about just the direction of this team right now, in this stretch through February, where we are 2-8. And like we noted at the top of the show, this was the stretch of schedule that you and I highlighted at different points as being one that was always going to be a backbreaker. And not only is that coming fruition right now, but it's also coming without a litany of core players on this roster. And it, like, everyone's dealing with injuries. I'm not saying that the Hawks are unique in this situation. But like you said, DeAndre Hunter has missed all the games he's missed has been since the beginning of February. That the Hawks are 2-8 this stretch has as much to do with the schedule as his absence, just because of how consistent he's been this year. And look, that's a problem too, because this is a deep, deep roster. It shouldn't fall on DeAndre Hunter's shoulders and the consistency in which he played with on both ends of the floor to be a team that should be, you know, at a minimum getting around 500 territory, much less like 200 over the last 10 game stretch. There's a lot of other issues that are going on right now. I mean, especially like you just mentioned last night, three of our four core players, you didn't even mention Danilo Gallinari, who also couldn't buy a bucket last night or hasn't been able to for pretty much since he returned from his ankle. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge reason too. I mean, like, these guys are getting good looks. I don't think when you watch these games, the Hawks miss open shots all the time. And that's I don't really know what the solution is to something like that. It's a bad stretch, a collective one at that, where, I mean, John Collins was missing open looks. Danilo Gallinari, I mean, he is aggressively trying to get his rhythm back. I was watching the Celtics broadcast last night because I shouldn't say exactly where I get my sources to watch these games, but I do not pay for League Pass. Anyway, I was watching the Celtics side of things, and you know, it was just interesting to hear their perspective on just like all of these different guys and how they just kind of came off of them. Gallinari's aggressiveness just hopped off the page to them as just like, this is a guy who has always just had this rhythmic consistency to his game. It's always come naturally to Gallinari. That's always been one of the highlights of him, you know, as a player. So it's like why we were so excited about him coming off the bench is that like security blanket on offense. He doesn't seem comfortable at all right now. And I think it's just because he's mostly playing with the reserves, trying to be the offensive supplement without Trae Young. And he's not playing with guys that really complement him in that way. He's a number one option with no natural facilitator out there. It's just, that bench unit is really suffering right now, which is ironic because they were actually the ones who got us back into that game last night. But that was mostly because of Tony Snell and Solomon Hill hitting some open shots, which is not really where you want to bank your success on. So I don't really know what the deal is there, but there's just like, there's a lot of rough shooting stretches going on for a bunch of individual guys that are all coinciding at once. And I don't really know when they're all open looks like that, how much of that you can really blame on the scheme.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned, you know, not having a natural facilitator out there with Gallinari, because Gallinari can set up for others and he can go get his own shot. But this is where, you know, the inconsistency in how often Rondo plays and how he has been playing really, really is, you know, highlighted, because we were expecting off the bench with Gallo and having Rondo that, okay, Rondo's going to help set up Gallo. And then Gallo can get his shot. And then even more so, he can set up for others on the bench. And when we were expecting to have Bogey in the starting lineup and you have Herter and Reddish in that second unit, that was going to be the offensive firepower created by the veterans Gallo and Rondo that we were expecting to see this year. And because of injuries, we have not been afforded that. So I think you're definitely right there that Gallo is forcing it more so because the pressure more so is on him to be the guy in that second unit. And there's games where he has 20, but there's also games where he's shooting 4 of 12 and he's abysmal from the three-point line, but he'll still get his double digits because he gets to the free throw line. So his aggressiveness, because he's a great free throw shooter, we're going to continue to need, whether whoever is in the lineup, whether Rondo's there, whether Skylar Mace helping him set up, Brandon Goodwin, whoever – basically, we need for him to be aggressive because he's such a great free throw shooter that he if he can get his points there and get in a rhythm at the free throw line, maybe he hits some more three-pointers there. Maybe he hits that mid-range jumper that is so beautiful when he gets it going. But it's just like the rest of the Hawks players when – they're running certain actions where they're not expected to get the ball. Mm-hmm. They're forcing shots. They're forcing opportunities. That's Cam Reddish's, you know, issue at times. And
his MO this year, frankly.
Yeah, and then Herter, who he is extremely effective when he's able to get into the mid-range game and get his shots going, and then he takes those three-point shots. Games where he's just shooting threes, he's not as efficient and not as effective because he's just jacking up threes instead of just letting him get into a spot in the mid-range, get those jumpers to fall, get himself to the free throw line, create for others, and then open up looks for threes. But like you said, they're getting clean looks. It's just the shots got to go down. And I know Lloyd Pierce, who we talked about, deflects a lot. I mean, mm-hmm. he knows his team. And if they're not getting into the gym to get shots up, but with the travel schedule and COVID and everything, that's hard to do. And people are still trying to get in rhythm when they're getting jacked in and out the lineup, or minutes are inconsistent and their touches are inconsistent. That's hard for players to do. And I see where all that is, you know, coming to a head on the court where they're not hitting open shots. But something, like you said, something's going to have to give if they're going to turn things around.
Yeah, I like that you touched on that. Like, guys are being thrust into different roles than I think they came into the season with. And that is caught, and that is part of the reason why you see guys forcing things a lot of nights. And look, that's something that maybe you could put, and I think that's something that you could turn around and put back on preparedness for the coaching staff. You know, it seems that there seems to be sort of a franticness to who takes over at certain stretches of the game, right? Like, it just feels like you mentioned with Cam Reddish, he's been forcing his shot pretty much all year. I mean, he's been just trying to will his way to going back to that stretch that he had to close out last season. Like, and it's clear that the coaching staff has empowered him to continue taking shots, to not demotivate him from all this poor efficiency. But it's just, I don't know. I feel that there, and this kind of harkens back to that podcast that you did at the beginning of the week about accountability issues, which has definitely been a theme recently with how the Hawks sputtered late in games. You have a fear that this team has a little bit of mixed stuff going on behind the scenes. Like, there's just sort of a lack of organizational structure that is putting players in the best positions to succeed. And it's tough when your rotation is as thin as it is. We were talking pretty much all offseason about how deep we became and how versatile we were with Bogdanovich and with guys like Bogdanovich and Herter being able to be these combo guards who could score and facilitate for others, and, you know, Reddish and Hunter taking leaps as defenders, and Trae Young continuing to take his all-star leap, and Gallinari just being this staple in the offensive unit. But now we have this situation where, you know, Cam Reddish is trying to replicate the success that DeAndre Hunter had to start his season, and it's not clicking. And Gallinari is trying to keep the bench afloat all on his own, and it's not working. Solomon Hill, who we brought in to be the veteran presence off the bench, he's a critical piece of this rotation. He is it's like a 7-man rotation of guys who play more than 23 minutes a night over these last 10 games. And, you know, Hill is, I mean, he's usually first or second guy off the bench. He's kind of been overqualified in the position. He's been as this 3-and-D guy all season long. It's just, I don't know. I'm rambling a little bit.
No. You're perfectly fine, because once again, and we'll touch upon this, but it goes back to preparedness. It's one of those things that, and we've seen it in games, where their first option or their main plan for an offensive execution or what they're going to do defensively, when it doesn't work, it kind of seems like Trae Young says, they're learning on the fly, trying to figure out, oh crap, what do we do? Because we were expected to have it this way, or have it be this way, or do this play, run this action, run this defense. And now that they are counteracting what we planned on doing, we're kind of in scramble mode to figure out what we got to do. With the injuries throughout the season, it seems like this coaching staff and LP is kind of in that same mode, that we're scrambling to try to find, like he even said it, find players to close games, find rhythm, find continuity, unity, and all that. We're struggling to find those things because what we planned on having going into the season is not available to us. And it's funny. It's what's reflecting as far as with the coaching staff and how they've managed the lineups with what they've had is translating on the court with the players and what they're getting night in and night out, and kind of just being caught with their pants down at times. So it's just it's all coming full circle. It's all coming full circle, in my opinion, from, you know, what you were saying and what we've been seeing, and it all kind of makes sense in a way.
Yeah, it's part of what comes when you have expectations of winning, is that adversity, when it hits differently. And I think that that's where we can sort of go towards the take this conversation towards the Lloyd Pierce side of things, which he his status as head coach has been a hotly contested topic, debated topic in Hawks fandom. And like you mentioned in your last pod about accountability issues, he has had this tendency in press conferences to really not address. I mean, look, the media has ways of framing questions and like where they want to get certain responses to drive particular narratives that they've had, or just that people in the fandom tend to perpetuate themselves. Lloyd Pierce seems unwilling to start conversations about where he and the coaching staff can improve and alter course to make this team click better. And by saying that, I'm not saying that he should admit that everything that's wrong here with the team is on them, because every point that we've been making so far on this podcast has pointed to all the things that are outside the coaching staff's control: injuries, tough schedule, not hitting open looks. Like, you know, I think that that's all fine and good, but there is an element to taking personal accountability in ways that you can change things up to get your guys in better positions to succeed, put guys in clear defined roles to do what they do well, to lend itself to winning basketball. And Lloyd, while I still like as a person, and I don't blame the Hawks' failures on an X's and O's issue when it comes to him personally, but he's just not, he has shown an unwillingness so far to admit to anything. He operates almost with a defensiveness that there is nothing that they can change to fix these issues internally. And I do feel that you sense, like you mentioned, that there is some, I wouldn't call it animosity, that's pretty strong. And it's in an uninformed position from my point, because I'm just a fan watching. I'm not covering the team and I'm not in those locker rooms. But you can tell that there's some level of disconnect between him and his star players. And it's really tough to dig yourself out of a rut like this when you can't have everyone on the same page. No one seems to be on the same page on how to address the issues that this team is going through right now. And that's kind of why it's hard to talk about them, because no one seems to be able to point to one thing that they can do to improve.
Yeah, it's just, for me, I mean, everything you said is spot on. Everything you said is spot on, and I know you talked about the X's and O's things, and me personally, the only X's and O's that I think he could maybe do better is try to be a little bit more creative on the offensive end, so that if they are running one specific action for, like, whether it's the pick and roll, pick and pop, they're running something off the ball that can be their second or third option if they are covering that well, so that at least they're running things and they're not standing still outside just watching, and they can give themselves an opportunity to get clean looks, a clean three off of the pick and roll if it's not available, or someone's making another secondary cut to the basket, as far as, you know, running some action, because I feel like they're just putting themselves, and Lloyd Pierce is putting them in bad positions offensively, where if this doesn't work, oh crap, we're just going to give it to Cam Reddish, we're going to give it to Herter, we're going to give it to whoever's standing on a three-point line.
Yeah.
And now they're going to have to create something, and they're not ready to get the ball. They did not expect to get the ball. And
I do agree with that. Yeah.
And then you see those forced opportunities. But there's a lot of things, like you said, are out of his control. And he just got dealt a raw hand, and I don't want to see him get fired. I want to see him succeed, obviously. But at the end of the day, the franchises are going to try to appease the fans. And if the fans are calling for this, ultimately they're going to point to things that they can blame on Lloyd Pierce, whether he's accepted blame or if he's deferred it all this time in post-game interviews. And they're going to get someone else that can help out on the offensive end to go with what Nate McMillan, because Nate McMillan showed in the last couple games defensively what his mindset and what he can do and what he can have the team do to keep them in games or to bring them back in games or to win games. And as far as game planning defensively, we're seeing that from Nate McMillan. He's been in the league for so many years. And if they can just pair somebody up with him that's offensively more creative than Lloyd Pierce, then I think it helps the Hawks take a next step and the growth and maturity on the offensive end for this team who should be very potent on the offensive end and currently are not. I mean, when you look at the last 10 games, they're shooting 46.5% from the field, 35.5% from three. Both of those numbers still higher than last year's season averages, but that's not where you want to be if you want to be a playoff team. And right now they're giving up defensively almost 119 points per game and scoring 112.5 points per game in its 10-game stretch. Yeah, so just not great in, you know, DeAndre Hunter being out, injuries and everything. It all makes sense. But after that great start to the year, I think their winning percentage is around 300 since that great start to the season. So who has been mostly the head coach or at the helm for those games? Lloyd Pierce. So it's easy for people outside looking in with little context to point the fingers at him and makes it easy to say, hey, that's the guy that we need to get rid of. And fans have seen that years past, even with a younger team and not nearly as enough from the bench as far as veteran presence as they have this year, and still losing games and still in-game decisions, decision-making just lacking for Lloyd Pierce. So a lot of it is unfair. A lot of it is just bad timing, bad hand dealt. But there are some things that within his control that if he was showing improvement in this year with the added talent, we would be having a completely different conversation.
And just to circle back to that point differential that you, like, what we give up and what we put up over the last few games, the last 10 game stretch, that would be, I think, second worst in the NBA on like a season long angle, with the Cleveland Cavaliers at like a differential of 9 points under would be the worst. So that just to highlight where the Hawks have been and exactly how bad it's been. But you made a great point about the lack of offensive creativity in the, as far as like some of the schemes that we go out there with that lead to guys like Reddish and Herter being put in positions where they are forcing things, which are also confidence killers in the macro. That is a good point. And that is another area that you would like to see a little more, I don't know, dialogue around from like his perspective and from the coaching staff's perspective. I want to ask you, do you think that Lloyd's a dead man walking at this point? I don't want to put it in those terms, but do you think that is there a path for him to hold on to this coaching job at the end of the year? I mean, clearly you would think that a playoff berth would satisfy the conditions for him to stick around. But I think I have an answer to this, but I'm curious, do you think that he ultimately has a pathway to being the coach of this team long term?
And I said on a previous episode, I think the only path for him to keep his job here with the Hawks is if they make a huge run, they make the playoffs, and they are, let's say, 8-7, 6 seed, they get into the playoffs, they do the play-in tournament, they went out, and if they get into the first round of the playoffs against a really good team, a Philly, a Boston, a Milwaukee, yeah, any of those top teams in the East, and let's say that is a competitive series and they lose in, let's say if they lose in 5-6 games or even 7 games and it was competitive in that time and they showed a lot to the NBA, like, okay, this team is close, but they lose in the first round. I think that warrants a conversation that say, hey, let's run it back, because they did compete hard under Lloyd Pierce and they gave a good showing in the playoffs. They worked, they dug themselves into a hole with the injuries, but they worked real hard to get back, put themselves in position to get into the playoffs, and they had a great showing. But if they get to the playoffs still and he gets swept, I think you can still make a case to let him go. Let him go. Or if he gets to the play-in tournament and they don't win, I think you let Lloyd Pierce go for that last year and don't bring him on. So I think that at minimum 5-6 games to be safe in a competitive series where there's no blowouts, they barely lose, great performances, a lot of growth, a lot of, you know, eye-opening performances, and everybody in the league is like, okay, this team is close. If that's a showing that they put out in the playoffs, then I think that Lloyd Pierce is brought back.
I think that he would be in that scenario as well. I have my fears, though, that the writing has been on the wall for him before we even came into this season.
Yeah.
I don't really think that I can see the long-term path for him. And I think it starts with the dynamic with Trae Young, because that's the one guy on this team that you can't fire. And look, I'm not gonna spend a whole spiel like going through past media comments and social media posts, like some of this cryptic stuff where that time where Lloyd Pierce didn't defend Trae Young making the cut for the All-Star team, and Trae sort of subtweeted him immediately after that. I'm not making a mountain out of a molehill out of those type of things. But those two, at least publicly, don't ever appear to be on the same page. It goes back to the, you know, the accountability thing, the public statements that differ between those two, where Lloyd talks about how the team just needs to execute, and Trae is talking about how the team feels like they're learning on the fly and they're ill prepared. I think that the organization knows that Trae Young is not a fan of Lloyd Pierce. I think that Nate McMillan being brought in, a defensive-minded coach, to sort of help overhaul this defense, which was the purpose of Lloyd being brought in the first place, was to be this defensive archetype, you know, to build out a foundation. I just don't know how you fix this dynamic between those two, and how you can build a sustainable culture of winning when the two most important people in the locker room are at odds. And it's like, it's a non-basketball take on my part. It is like, there's no, you know, X's and O's to this. But to me, it just feels like, I feel like he's in a position where he can't win.
Yeah.
I really think that this, we could talk about the front office's role in that as well, because with the John Collins stuff on the side, because that's a huge thing to be looming over this season as well, to come in with these playoff expectations and to create this situation with your second best player where he's playing for a contract and he might be looking around thinking, I'm not valued properly here, and they might be trading me soon.
Yeah.
Like, how are you supposed to get your team on the same page with each other? I mean, like, aside from the fact that, you know, publicly, again, these two are pointing to different reasons for the lack of success. I just think that I'm not saying that Lloyd has been set up to fail, because there is blame on his part, too. But I don't think that he is in a situation where he can realistically be the coach of the future on this team.
And unfortunately, I agree with you. Like, he is basically in a position where he's trying to claw his way up the mountain and mm-hmm. doesn't have all the necessary equipment to get to the top of the mountain, but is still judged on getting to the top. And it's just it is what it is at this point. And we're going to talk a little bit more about John Collins in the second half of this program, and about accountability and Nate McMillan. So we're gonna get into all that after this quick plug for Bruised Letter.
Okay, quickly, we need to pause the show for an announcement. And it's a fun one. It's free stuff. Everybody loves free stuff. What's the stuff? The Bruised Letter is back. Oh, yes. Back and fresh for the 2020-2021 NBA season. Our founder, Aaron Brewski, the GOAT, is writing an email newsletter filled with its most intimate fantasy nuggets. It's exclusive content you cannot find anywhere else. It's not on the website. It's not on any podcast. It's not on social media.
It's only in an email newsletter, and you can sign up to get it for free. I said it free. Just go to bit.ly/bruiseletter2021 and sign up in 10 seconds. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, seis, siete, ocho, nueve, diez. 10 seconds. Again, the site is bit.ly/bruiseletter2021, and you get it straight from the GOAT and Brewski into your inbox, and enjoy the nuggets to help you succeed in your fantasy basketball league. All right, and we are back, and I wanted to jump right back in, Alan, and talk about as far as the situation Lloyd Pierce is in. We talk about the relationship between him and Trey, and I mean, before I started covering this team, I heard that that relationship isn't the best, and I see it with body language and how he responds to Lloyd Pierce during games, and that was a mark against him. Bring in Nate McMillan. You talked about how Lloyd Pierce was supposed to be the defensive-minded coach and great with player development, and how the player development has been seen in these players here in the Hawks, but how much can you really attribute that to Lloyd Pierce? That is that's something that you can't really grade, because everybody has their own player development coaches in the offseason that works on their individual games, and that's what Lloyd Pierce was known for outside of defense, and you really can't grade him on that. And then you talk about the defense, which has been horrendous because of youth and because of, you know, the lack of players that they had on the team, and then you bring in Nate McMillan, and the defense is better this year. The defense is statistically better this year.
It's a bright spot.
Yeah, and it's a bright spot, and you can point to Nate McMillan. And we saw a little bit of differences with him at the helm, but we saw a little bit of the same that you can just point back to blame on the players of what they need to do better in the Boston series. And so we keep talking about accountability. Who needs to be accountable more? I know that there is a disconnect between both sides, and is it Lloyd Pierce? Is it Trey? I don't want to really want to put John Collins in this conversation, because, like you said, there's a whole nother situation looming with John Collins. We're gonna talk about that after, you know, I get your take on this. There's a lot of health issues and DeAndre Hunter not being there. Who needs to be more accountable? Is it Lloyd Pierce, or is it just the players saying, hey, we just got to just step up. We got to band together, and we got to take this on ourselves. If we're not going to get all that we can from LP to help us succeed, we're going to have to play above our coaching. And I've been on teams where that was the case, where we hadn't got all we wanted from, you know, the coaching staff that we thought we needed. And it was just kind of like a FU mentality. We're going to have to play above our coaching. And that's where the team comes together, because there isn't really a unity, I feel like, amongst this team. And it's hard to do that with people in and out the lineup. You know, it's Trae Young's team, and not everyone gets as many touches as they would like, but he's still trying to get him touches, but still trying to be aggressive in his spots. And I feel like Trae Young has a hard job as well, because he's trying to make it all work himself. And it goes back to the lack of offensive creativity. If you have a more creative offense where Trae Young has that responsibility, but there's other things going on to make his job easier, and it's not all on his shoulders, I think it would cut down the turnovers. I think it would cut down the frustration. I think that it would make people feel even more engaged, because, okay, I'm running the screen now to get this player open, but hey, they're running a pick and roll, but there's going to be an opportunity for me to get something on the back end of this play in this next possession. Like I don't see any of that. And I feel like if this would happen, it would alleviate some of the stress on Trey's shoulders. It would make this offense look better. And if everyone's getting touches and feeling the love on offense, they're going to play better on a defensive end.
Yeah. I have a lot of respect for Trey Young. I mean, I think the guy gets way too much hate nationally. It's absurd that the talent that he has, that he possesses, that he has at every level, that he has overcome all those doubts from draft day, and has, I mean, he is cemented as one of the game's most just prolific offensive stars that we have. There's no question. There are obviously areas that he could improve, particularly off ball, in reorganizing himself on the floor, using his gravity to his advantage to shift defenses to follow him. he's never been that kind of player. In fact, his college coach, I think, was pretty blatant, was just pretty like flat about it. I forgot, it escapes me who the name of him, but I think he said in a recent interview, like, yeah, Trey doesn't do anything off ball. And we always knew that. And it's just something that he's got a ways to go to figure out. I mean, it's like, that's not like, not coming for his head. It's just true. And it'd be a hugely important development in his game to not only make himself a more dynamic offensive player, but those around him as well. Because, again, like, you got to follow that guy on defense. You change your position on the floor to make sure that he is not getting himself an open look. But like, he's a young guy. He's like 21. Like, he, of course, he still has a lot to learn and a lot to. There's a ton of time for him to mature as an offensive player like that. It's part of the expectations of winning that's been put on this team as early as they were because of his star power primarily. I mean, that's, if we're being honest, that's the reason. It's like, we're trying to make the playoffs because Trae Young is an all-star starter last season. And he is like, he's on an incredibly favorable contract, and it's a great time to build a team around him with vets and young, talented players and like turn into like the Golden State Warriors dynasty playbook. I mean, that's kind of like what they want to be here. And that's a really tough line to walk.
Yeah.
I think there's obviously more that he can do to get others involved, especially like when a play, like I think you, like you just touched on, like what you said last, when like a play breaks down, it's immediately, there's rarely a reset. It's either you kick the ball back up to Trey and he calls for, he goes ISO, maybe tries to get a floater off, maybe tries to get a pick and roll action with Capella or Collins, but there's no, like, if a play is broken up, everyone just sort of floats to their corners on the floor and just sort of wait to see what Trey can maneuver and create for someone else. And that's not an efficient way to really run an offense.
Yeah, and I think they need to take pages from the Golden State Warrior book. Watch what they do with Steph, because if they do that with Steph all the time with all the pieces that they have on their team, they would suffer as well as a result as well. So that's why, like I said, the offensive creativity that Steve Kerr infused into this team once Mark Jackson left, and all the action that they run, all the screens they run, and that's a product of obviously coming under the Greg Popovich tree and learning under one of the best coaches in NBA history, and Pop, and learning how he runs his offense and ran the show down in San Antonio. He brought that to Golden State, and he had Mike Brown on the bench, who is a defensive-minded coach, and that's what made the Golden State Warrior dynasty that we know today to win all those championships, and they got those players to buy into that system because they knew that they were going to get their touches. That we're not seeing that right now with the offenses they're running here in Atlanta, and that's why I say that as a scapegoat, Lloyd Pierce is going to have to probably be forced out so they can get a coach. And I don't know who that coach is, who is a great offensive-minded coach. Maybe he's an assistant on one of these teams that are successful. Maybe he's on Utah staff. I don't know. Maybe it's an assistant from the Suns. Whoever is part of a great offensive team in the NBA that is ready to take the head coach helm, have Nate McMillan to help on the back end of things as far as administratively to be a coach, let them do their thing offensively, let McMillan do the thing defensively with the talent that they have on his team, and let's build from there. Let's build what Golden State has had success in with the foundations that we have put in place, with the players that we've drafted, with the veterans that we have, with how we structure our coaching staff, and go from there. I think that is how we as a franchise here in Atlanta take that next step. And unfortunately, it's going to have to come to Lloyd Pierce being Mark Jackson, like I've said multiple times on this program, and being moved on to get the right coach that, even though everyone says offensively is not our problem, it's defense. Like, we get that. But if everyone feels the love offensively, they're going to play better on the defensive end. It's just a fact. Everybody makes jokes about the guys in pickup games who, after the guy who makes the first shot, he's like, get back. He's ready to play defense because he got a shot and he's happy now. He's going to be more reluctant to play defense because he got that shot. He got that touch. As much as everyone likes to make a joke about that, I feel like there's some truth into that as well. And I'm not saying that that is is what's happening on his team, but because they're better on the defensive than this year. But I mean, you feed someone, they're going to be more reluctant to do more for you, for the team, for others if they feel the love.
And on the Golden State comparison too, we should say that it's unfair to put the Steph Curry expectation not on just Trey, but on anyone, because he is uniquely special in the ways that he's able to maneuver himself off ball. Not even that, though. He's playing with a generational type of facilitator in Draymond Green, who is like, he's like Green has an equal share in how that offense runs because of his ability to just kick the ball anywhere on the floor. The Hawks don't have anyone like that outside Trae Young. I mean, Trae has both of those skill sets in one. I mean, to a degree. I'm not saying that Trae Young's a combination of Steph and Draymond, but you know what I'm saying. Like, Trae's got the range, and Trae's got the passing prowess. And that's a personnel issue, too, on this team, where you don't have those secondary creators. I mean, you have one in Bogdanovich, which, again, hugely, hugely important to get him back on this team. You could see it in those first 5 to 8 games on the season where he was out there. He makes such a difference as being just this player on the floor who, I mean, he's crafty offensively and he can score in a multitude of different ways, but he's a legitimate passer. So is Kevin Huerter, but I think Bogdanovich is a tier or two above him. And I mean, look, I think that the Hawks in general just need more players like that to even start the conversation about turning Trae Young into this off-ball type of player. Because, I mean, he's on the ground floor of trying to develop that skill set, you know? And there's, again, plenty of time for him to do that. Zero expectations that he should start running around like Steph Curry this season. But you can't – even if you get different coaching staff in here, if you don't have the personnel to make that kind of stuff work, then it's just a failed effort. And, you know, maybe this is why, you know, Travis Schlenk, of course, you know, you can't talk about the Golden State comparisons without starting with Schlenk, who drafted Trae Young because he saw the next Steph Curry or Steve Nash or whatever in him. He saw the offensive engine that is Trae Young to start his new Golden State, essentially, down south. And you wonder, I mean, how critical – we talk about John Collins and all the special things that he does offensively for a big man, and they are special. I mean, he's in the midst of a second season with close to 50-40-80 splits. That's crazy for a 6'10 guy who can grab you 10 rebounds as well, who is, I'd say, above average defensively at this point. He's had a great year on that side of the ball. But, you know, one element that he lacks offensively is that he cannot generate offense on his own and he can't generate offense for others. And I wonder what level that plays in the equation and the front office's uneasiness in committing long-term to him. Like, do they see it as an issue of they need more personnel that can move things around and get others involved? Because they have, I mean, like Hunter, I'd say is similar to Collins in like his offensive profile in that he's developing more as a guy who could create his own shot, but he's not much of a distributor. I mean, do you think that's what it comes down to, is that Collins is too dependent on other players to succeed and that this team needs more players on the floor who can facilitate?
I think you hit the hammer on the nail right there. John Collins, a lot of his offense is being in his spots where he's effective or people setting him up. And as you said, DeAndre Hunter is working on, you know, creating his own shot, getting his own shot, being more aggressive in that regard. Great in the catch and shoot and one of the best defenders on the team. And I think that John, because you already have Capello, who you have to set up a lot of things for.
That's another aspect, too,
Yes, and if you have John Collins, who is similar in that, and yes, he can step back and shoot the three, and he's been knocking the three ball down really great this year, being for over 40% again, but you have to set up a lot of things for him. I think that does take a step back, and I think that's why in spurts, he doesn't get as many touches as people want him to get or as he should get, because you have to set him up. And other teams know that, so they're guarding him and fronting him and making it and denying him the ball so that you can't get him the ball, because they know that he's not going to go and get his own shot. And it make, and that's where, like you said before, we miss Bogey. Bogey can help with that. And then you miss DeAndre Hunter, who is not afraid and he can go get his own shot. So you need more guys who can, you know, pass the ball, get their own shot. And that's where, and it's a perfect segue, we talk about the hesitance for this franchise to sign him long term. I think that's why. I think that's one of the reasons why. And that's why I think that ultimately they do move on and try to get some value from him. And I know in the last program I talked about, you know, trading for Michael Porter Jr., who fits into what the Hawks are looking for, a high first round lottery pick that could help now. And then maybe they get some other picks from the Nuggets. But, you know, Michael Porter can get his own shot. He's 6'10". He can shoot. You don't have to run plays for him. I mean, you can. If you run a play for Michael Porter Jr., he's getting to the rim and he's dunking on somebody, or he's pulling up and hitting a step back, and because he can create his own shot and get his own shot, because a lot of people thought he was going to be the next Kevin Durant coming into the league, and that's lofty, you know, expectation to put on his shoulders because of his size and his jump shot ability and everything. But he has a lot of potential in that regard, and I think in some regards more potential than John Collins. I think obviously John Collins is a better defender than Michael Porter Jr. And if he's in a situation where he's around other players who are good defenders and he can learn good team defense, maybe he grows better as an individual defender. Talking about Michael Porter Jr. And we talk about off air the connection between Michael Porter Jr. and Trae Young, that they have a brothers type bond from playing AAU ball in 2015, 2016. And when Michael Porter Jr. asked Trae Young to be part of their Kansas City based AAU team, and they jailed on and off the court. So that's why I kind of put that out there, because John Collins, you got to create offense for. You got to find him. You got to give him looks on the post and everything. And if he was like, it'd be different if he was great passing out of the post and finding people, because they have to key in on him because he's such a great post player, and they double and then boom, he has that ability like a Jokic to find that guy, pass out of the double team and get open looks for. But like I said, John Collins is not known for that. He's not known for putting the ball on the floor. And so they need more people who can, like Travis Schlenk says, and what Golden State tried to do, dribble, pass, shoot, dribble, pass, shoot. If you can find guys that fit that mold around Trae Young. And like I said, with Capella, you already have to initiate offense, but everybody else can go get their own shot and you can run off ball things to do, and they can shoot and score from any part of the floor and dribble and get and create their own shot, that just makes this team better. And so I know that you have some thoughts about John Collins, if he should be traded, if we should wait, and maybe a short list of teams that maybe we should be looking for. So I'm going to give you the floor to talk about that right now.
I mean, personally, I think that it's going to be tough to deal John Collins in a way where the Hawks ultimately aren't losing out in the grand scheme of things. I think that there's few deals that they can make in where they're both improving this team's immediate future as well as their long-term one. Because John Collins, we can't underrate how valuable of a player he is in today's game.
Oh yeah.
He is fundamentally one of the best offensive big men that you'd want to build around in like just how the game is functioning. He can really score from anywhere on the floor.
Yeah, I want to jump in and say, like, I wasn't trying to say that he's not.
I know great. You are.
Yeah. So, no, that's for the fans. Yeah. I'm not saying that John Collins is not great, because obviously
of course.
He is great. But
And he's 23. You know, like, yes. He is on the trajectory that you would want for a young team like this. Like, we're not trying to win a title this year and be foolish to think that we were ever going to. We're trying to build something. You know, we're trying to build a culture of winning, and you want to do that with young players. That can not only grow as individuals and expand their games, but just grow as a team. You know, like, continuity is a big deal right now. You look at the top of all the best teams in the NBA right now are the ones that are fielding rosters that are 2, 3, 4 years old. Utah Jazz, Milwaukee Bucks, Los Angeles Lakers. Like, these guys are, I mean, the Lakers are kind of a 2-year-old team, and that's just what LeBron, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, consistency, continuity matters to a certain degree. So for me, it's tough. Like, I love John Collins. I always have. I understand where the limitations are for him on this roster. And I also understand that he's a very valuable player. And if the and it's I feel I've been frustrated in the conversations about the trade about trading him because I've felt that he is being undervalued by his own team. Yeah. And I just yeah, go
but
ahead.
But I do have a question. How much of them willing to listen to offers for John Collins has to do with the surprise play of Clint Capela, who virtually was doing the same things that John Collins was outside of shooting the three last year and doing it at a better clip as far as when you're looking at rebounding, blocking shots, and scoring. I mean, there's a lot of games where Capella's getting 22, 23 points this year, which is a huge shock to me. Going into the season, I was expecting 11, 12 a game, maybe, and then getting the 12 rebounds. And he's grabbing 15, 16, 17, and has a couple 20-rebound games. I think that the play of Capela is making it a little bit easier for, because like I said, you don't need two rim runners. Like, as much as it's great to have a rim runner for Trae Young, and Capela fits that role beautifully, and Collins fits that role beautifully, but in today's game, you don't necessarily need that. You just need pretty much one, in my opinion. Yeah. Yeah, so right. so how much do you think that their willingness to listen to offers for Capela, for Collins has to do with the unsuspected play of Capela and also how much he's getting paid?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, Capella's been great this year, obviously. And he's young, too. He's 26 or 27, somewhere in that range. And that's still perfectly young. I still feel that Capela is a limited player, though, because, I mean, yeah, like, it's tough to have two rim runners out there. And there has been issues, particularly for John Collins, trying to reposition himself on the floor when Capella's always kind of clogging the lane. Like, you know, Collins is a terrific outside shooter, but he's kind of overqualified as a floor spacer, like a Davis Bertans type of deal, you know? So to a degree, I mean, the Hawks in their actions in getting Capela, it was just an effort to improve the interior defense, which was about as bad as there was in the league last season. And he's done that in a tremendous way. Drafting Onyeka Okongwu to me felt like the future facing type of move to, like, this is not – Okongwu is not only a guy who can help us defend the paint in the future, but he's also got this potential to be a guy who can guard multiple positions. Capella is not that kind of player. And there is hope that Onyeka could perhaps expand his range a little bit, start some – maybe see a little bit like Bam Adebayo is doing this year and start knocking down – be a little more of a face-up guy. But that's down the road type of things. I feel that all of that – I don't know how much of that plays a role into the Collins, like their desire to move off of him. I do think it plays a role in all of this, though. It's just, I don't know. I think, to me, if you're going to go ahead and make the trade, which to me, I think it's inevitable, frankly, because this team knows damn well that John Collins is getting a max offer from some team this offseason. It's just, there's no doubt about it. He's too young and he's too talented. And that's how restricted free agency works. Teams try and screw each other over. That's exactly how we wound up with Bogdan Bogdanovich. we produced the most unappealing contract for the Sacramento Kings to match so that we would be able to land him in free agency. Collins is getting a max offer. And if he's not traded, it's ultimately just going to be the Hawks taking the deal that they didn't want to give him this offseason or losing him for nothing. And if they're a smart team, and I like to think that they are, I think that they're going to end up trading him in advance. So in light of that, I would hope, like, Michael Porter Jr. is an interesting name to throw out there because he is more dynamic offensively than John Collins. I think that I would have my concerns defensively. Mm-hmm. I know that he's got some, I know that he has, like, you know, physically speaking, he could develop into a better defender, but he has so far through his career shown that he's a couple steps behind Collins in that regard. And I also don't think he's much of a facilitator either, but the offensive upside is tremendous, no doubt. And the chemistry does exist with Trae Young too, so that's absolutely worth noting. Here's one that I think that, and this is sort of like a moonshot for me. It might be a little unrealistic, but at the same time, if you're trying to think of comparable offers that could be made for this particular player, I think that the Hawks can actually field a rather competitive one. I think it wouldn't be crazy to see the Hawks emerge as a potential suitor for Bradley Beal.
Ooh.
I mean, I think if you're talking about a return for Beal, and the market's not great out there in any potential swap for him. Like, I think that Denver is a possibility. They have the assets to make it work. I think Chicago makes sense as a potential landing spot. They have several assets to in terms of like young players to make that work. But thinking about Beal and his fit next to Trae Young, I think that Beal is young, same age as Capella, I'm pretty sure. He's an all-star. He is as dynamic a scorer as there is in the league right now. He's a good facilitator. He's been playing point guard for years in Washington, pretty much between all of John Wall's injuries and Westbrook's injuries this year. And
yep.
I mean, I think that's the type of player that I'm. And yet, people are probably thinking, like, yeah, I'm sure you're comfortable with that kind of deal. You're getting the best guy on the market for a deal centered around John Collins. But that's a future-facing and immediate type of impact move. And I think that it can work between him and Trae. I really do. Beal is really no slouch defensively. I don't think he gets enough credit for just being able, not with the effort he puts on that end of the floor, but he is just really good at reading passing lanes, and I think he's a good leader. Yeah. I really do. I think that, you know, and again, the Wizards could do much worse than building a deal around John Collins and how I've described him. He is 23 years old and he can do pretty much everything you want offensively aside from dribbling the ball and making plays for others. But, you know, I think the Hawks have contracts that can make that deal work. I think it's feasible.
I mean, I definitely see what you're getting at with Brad Beal. I think he'd be a great fit here in Atlanta. And I'm assuming that we would give up, you know, Collins. We would probably give up I would say Tony Snell because of his contract. And that's something that Washington, and draft picks. Yeah, Tony, they can bite the $12 million for Snell. And then obviously he'll be, you know, they won't be obligated to him after this year. So I can see that working out. But my only concern with that trade is, and it has nothing to do with any of the players involved, it's that, are you really going to want to have to go against John Collins? How many times do we normally play the Wizards in a year? Is it at least what?
Yeah, it's three or four, but it's
four times. Yeah. Do you really want to go against John Collins four times?
I'll ask the Wizards. If I'm the Wizards, I'd rather not go against Bradley Beal, I guess, in that equation. But I also feel that that's like, I don't know. This isn't like the NFL. You know, it's not like the Falcons are trading Matt Ryan quarterbacks divisions are. It's not like we're trading Matt Ryan to the Saints and are afraid to, we're not afraid to see him two times a year. I don't think anyone would be happy in that deal I just made up there. But basketball, you play everybody all the time. And look, the Wizards are on the bottom barrel of their rebuild. The Hawks shouldn't be worried about facing them. They should be worried about facing off against the Celtics. You know, they should be worried about if we're talking about making a march to the playoffs in the future. I think that Bradley Beal, I don't think there's a doubt that he would satisfy every condition that you would want in a player to build around in general, obviously, but especially for what this team needs. You want a guy, just a clear cut offensive option who can hold his own on defense, who is able to get others involved, and who is a leader. Who I really think that Bradley Beal, I mean, he's clearly well respected amongst his peers. I've never seen anyone in Washington ever have a negative thing to say about him. I mean, he holds himself with poise through a lot of garbage years that those Wizards teams have put him through. I mean, if the Wizards are committed to trading Bradley Beal, it's not unrealistic for a team like the Hawks to get involved. They have plenty of young players. They have all their draft picks. Outside Denver and Chicago, I don't really know who else is realistically able to get involved. It's not, you know, Lakers fans, quiet down, stop it. I know y'all got to get involved in every conversation about trading for star players, but this one ain't it. You don't have anything. Kyle Kuzma's not on the table.
Yeah, quick question. I have a friend of mine who listens to the program sometime, and he's trying to tell me that the Lakers are going to get Blake Griffin. And I'm just sitting here like, buddy.
And, I mean, like, in a trade?
He was like, we're going to trade him. We're going to do the trade for Blake Griffin. I'm like, what bench are you going to have after that? I'm like, come on now. I don't know.
Frankly, and look, I love Blake Griffin. I don't know who would want to put. I don't think there's any way he's getting out of Detroit via a trade. I'm just gonna say it. I don't think it's possible.
It has to be a buyout.
It has to be. And in that scenario, yeah, the Lakers make a ton of sense. They're honestly, I could see them getting Blake Griffin through that means, just because Blake has shown, you know, the decline has been very apparent. He has a $36 million player option next year that, you know, he's obviously going to be taking. There's just no trade that exists that I would even want my team to be involved in at this stage. But I'll say it. Your friend might be right for the wrong reasons. I think they're just going to wind up with – they could just wind up with Blake in April just through free agency.
That's disgusting that he could be right for the wrong reasons. Oh, Lord. But I definitely see where you're coming from with Bill, and someone who spent time in St. Louis. It would be, and obviously I was in high school at the same time Brad Beal was in St. Louis and watched him play. It would be great to see him in Atlanta, and I think that he would have success along Trae Young, and obviously having to play with John Wall, another guy who is ball dominant. It wouldn't be much of an adjustment for him to have to play off of Trae Young. But it goes back to the point where if, you know, Trae Young can work on being off, playing off the ball off of Beal, it could really take this team to the next level. So I like that take.
And I'll just reemphasize this too. I think my first preference is to not trade John Collins. Yes. That's where it's at. I've resigned myself, though, that at this point, based off of the Hawks' actions, I fail to see a scenario that would make sense for them. Just following their logic, that would make sense. Unless they bite the bullet and sign John to the max that he gets offered from some other team and just decide to do that to just lower morale for a year, that'd be pretty dumb. I mean, like, it's just because, I mean, they had to have known through negotiations this offseason that this dude is going to get maxed by some team in the offseason. It's just, it would be foolish for them to not sign him outright with the clear information that, like, I don't even think they would even need any intel to know that Collins is going to get an offer from some team like that this offseason. It's just, if you're not trading him, you're sowing discontent for no reason. Yeah. And yeah, so I hope that he stays long term. I don't think it's realistic. And Bradley Beal trade might not be realistic either. I'm on a Hawks podcast. trying to manifest the best possible outcome in a Bradley Beal trade, just from like a pure talent perspective. But I do think that's like the Hawks need to be able to, they have to be able to walk both paths that they've set up for themselves, which is almost impossible to do. But they are a young rebuilding team with playoff aspirations. You're trading your second best young player. You need immediate returns and you need future assets as well.
Yeah, and on the last episode, I definitely said that a trade of John Collins is probably very unlikely, especially how integral he is to this team this year, especially with the high, lofty expectations. In a contract year for Lloyd Pierce, it will be very, very hard for them to part ways with John Collins. But if they're able to get someone who can fit, you know, the needs of the future and now, like a Brad Beal, and I think Brad Beal definitely more so now than Michael Porter Jr., who I mentioned. But any player like that, if they can do that and continue to build upon the everybody pass, shoot, you know, dribble, you know, to do all the things, tick all the boxes as far as what you want a basketball player to do, especially if you're in an offense where you have one player kind of created for everyone else, but you want everybody else to be able to go and create their own shots as well. Both of those guys fit that mold. And it would just be interesting to see going forward what the Hawks do with that. And speaking of Michael Porter Jr., the Nuggets are who roll into town tomorrow here in the State Farm Arena. And the Hawks continue this tough stretch of games where They got to go against Jokic, who was playing at close to an MVP level. You had Murray, who just dropped the 50-burger last night against the Cavaliers when they were supposed to play the Hornets and got redirected to Cleveland. This is for you. And he dropped a lot on you last night, more than the snow that the country got over the last several days. And then you got Michael Porter Jr. So it'll be interesting to see with Michael Porter Jr. being reunited with Trae Young on the court in a game, how well Michael Porter Jr. performs tomorrow night. I'm going to be looking at that carefully, on top of just seeing how the Hawks are going to respond. Lloyd Pierce will be back on the sideline. They lost a game in which they had a horrendous second quarter, but played pretty good in the second half, except for some, you know, lack of down the stretch defensive execution to try to inch them closer and closer to trying to steal this game back from Boston. So I'm really interested to see how they're going to play tomorrow night and if they're going to break out of this cold streak at some point. It's not going to get easier. I think the schedule is a little more favorable the next several games compared to what they have gone through.
Especially with the Heat being as rough as they have been this year.
Yes. Yes, having to play the Heat twice, you got Boston, you got the Nuggets tomorrow night. OKC is not going to be an easy cakewalk, and then you end with the Magic in Orlando. Yep. We don't know when the second half of the season schedule will be released, but they're going to have to finish strong to kind of inch their way back, at least to, I'd say, they, if we can end this stretch as close to the 8th seed as possible, and with the tough schedule that we've had the first half, I think it lends to us having a little bit more favorable schedule in the second half. Maybe there's an opportunity for us to just put together a run with everyone healthy coming back. Finally get Chris Dunn on the floor, who we haven't even talked about on this program.
Man, that has been such a kick in the nads. He was so good defensively last year. Talk about a guy who would make a huge difference if he was out there right now.
Yes, he would make a huge difference getting Bogey back, getting DeAndre Hunter back, just having a full deck of cards to play with for this Hawks team. Let everybody just get settled in a role and let's get on a run this second half. And until all that happens, the players are going to have to take it upon themselves to play above their coaching, no matter how well prepared this coaching staff, you know, makes this team or not. It's clearly shown that there's a disconnect between the team and the players, and they're going to have to play above that and play for each other if they want to get to the playoffs. If they want to do it, they got to take it upon themselves. And that accountability aspect, they got to take it upon themselves, next man up, to play above and go beyond and really try to get everyone going, to try to build together a little run to go into All-Star break. And then let's see if they can start the second half of the season strong and try to put some games together to at least put themselves in a play-in situation so they can reach that ultimate goal of the playoffs.
Yeah, no, and again, like, we've not scratched the surface on what this team can be. We've not seen a bunch. We've had too many critical pieces out at different times. That five-game stretch that we saw at the beginning of the year, there was something to that this team doesn't have right now, that they haven't had pretty much all year since then, where you had pretty much all of your guys healthy. Bogey was out there. Gallinari was out there. Hunter was still cooking. I don't want this team to blow things up and go a different route before we even get to see the potential of what we just put together this offseason, because there was something there. So I really hope that, again, yeah, the second half, that we get guys back, that we actually start to build some consistency with this group, that Collins is ultimately a part of it. There's so much this team was proving that they could do offensively with those guys together. So, yeah, man, I'm in agreement with you. We shouldn't be closing the book on this season right now. I mean, there's a lot of room to maneuver going forward.
Agreed. There's a lot of room, a lot of pieces that we need to get back. And like I said, the players who are available and healthy, they're going to have to take it upon themselves to, you know, we're going to have to turn water into wine. We're going to have to do what we can. And mm-hmm. The schedule doesn't get any easier, you know, these next few games with, you know, like I said, how well the Nuggets have been playing, how Jokic has been playing. Murray's coming in with some confidence. And obviously this team who has been together and had some success in the playoffs, they have that continuity. So they're going to come in with a chip on their shoulder here in Atlanta and try, especially after playing well against the Cleveland Cavaliers last night. They're going to come in tomorrow night and certainly be ready to play, but we got to be ready to play as well. And hopefully we can, you know, put a good showing out and just take it one game at a time. That's what I always say. I always try to take it one game at a time, as down as you want to be about the game prior, if losing 8 of the last 10, as down as you want to be, there's always another game. There's always another opportunity to get better, just like in your own personal lives. There's always the next day. The next day, you can make it yours. You can make it better. People get dealt, you know, tough cards, and I know that the people in Texas and across the South who are unprepared for this freeze and what's going on there, you know, my thoughts and prayers go out to you right now. If you are listening to this program in the great state of Texas, without power, it's just a lot. And if people can send aid there, send aid if you can. There's a lot of people to dealt tough hands here in this country, but you have a new opportunity each day to make it yours. And Atlanta has that opportunity, and we still have a lot of season left to play. And Alan, I want to thank you again for coming on the program today. I wanted to end on a little bit more positive note, even though we talked about some real, you know, downers. Outside of Skylar Mays, which made me happy. That made me real happy today.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, we got, and while we can end it with some more Skylar Mays too. You talk about next man up. There's a great candidate right there. There is still plenty of opportunity for him to get more involved in that backcourt and continue to get some reps. I'd love to see him go on a nice little stretch here over these last seven games or so to maybe make more inroads in this rotation.
I would love to see it, too. I just want to see growth from him, Okongwu as well. And I like what Nathan Knight has done in the limited minutes. I mean, I know they're still young.
Rookies are young, but they're good, man.
Yes, I like them. We have some good rookies. They just need they needed a summer league. They needed a camp, and they didn't have that luxury. And I wish they were I really wish the Hawks had a G League team that they could get some clock and get some consistent minutes and build some, you know, confidence in their game. But this is the cards that they're dealt, and they're making the most of it. And that's all we can ask for as fans. And we're going to have to make the most of it as well. And that's what Lloyd Pierce has been trying to do. Blame warranted in some regards and other regards. I mean, it's just it is what it is. And it's a tough situation for anyone to navigate. And since we're not in that position, we can say all we want on this program. And rightfully so. There's some, you know, really accurate things to point out as far with Lloyd Pierce. But we're out of his shoes. We don't get paid to do that job, and it's a really tough job, and it's one of the hardest jobs in the NBA right now with 100%. The expectations we have. But once again, I want to thank my friend Alan for coming on the program. Alan, you've been doing some great things for the network as of late with your analysis for us, Fantasy Goes, and I've been, you know, when I've been working, and I've been seeing your tweets pop up. I've been trying to read into your material and seeing the hard work that you're doing, so it's much appreciated on my end and for the network and fans. Y'all need to go check them out, especially if you're in fantasy basketball and your team may be in a little slump like the Hawks. You need to check out to see what Alan is seeing as far as in the NBA landscape, as far as fantasy goes, to help your team out, figure out trades, figure out waiver pickups and all that. You know, Alan is the man. That's why he's on the program with me today. So tell them how they can get connected with you and what all you got going on, Mr. Strokey.
I really appreciate the kind words, Brad, as always. And again, thank you for having me on. I love talking Hawks. Love talking them with you, too, in particular. If you guys want to reach out to me on Twitter, that's where you can find me. It's at Alan Strokey, AlanSrochi. Right now, I'm there, like Brad was alluding to, I've been working with the YouTube side of the Hoopball Network. We've been launching a bunch of new shows. We've been doing pregame shows pretty much that come from a fantasy basketball perspective. I did a really cool show this past Thursday with Jovan Bua of The Athletic. He came on, was very gracious, and gave us a lot of very interesting information about how he views the Los Angeles Lakers going forward without Anthony Davis, and provided some information about how he views Anthony Davis and the team, how they'll treat him going forward. I mean, you know, there's no way to know for sure, but his insight was very valuable. So you guys can check that out at youtube.com/hoopball. And yeah, that's primarily what I'm working on these days, and it's been a ton of fun.
Yeah, so you heard him. Check him out. Check the things that we got going on this network. I know I've been really busy with school and work as of late, but I always got to make time for you listeners, and I do apologize that I may not have the game-to-game breakdowns that you've been looking for, but I try to have these, these real conversations. We break down what has been going on the court and recently with the Hawks and talk about the storylines and everything. So hopefully you do enjoy this. Give your feedback. Hit me up on Twitter. And if you love what you heard today, give us 5 stars. Give us a great review. Share it. Tell everybody about the hottest new podcast covering the Atlanta Hawks. That is no cap. Numbers do not lie. Like I said, hit me up on Twitter at Brad Jarrett 67. That is Brad JARRETT 67. Follow the show at Hoopball Hawks on Twitter. That is at Hoopball Hawks for the latest episodes, for the latest breakdowns, latest fantasy numbers regarding the Hawks players, the news, and all that. Follow us, follow me, follow Alan. And we just thank you guys for the support. We thank you for your patience. We thank you for your continued listening of this wonderful program. We're going to continue to give you guys the content that you deserve in due time with our very, very busy lives scheduled. I know that your lives are busy as well. So I hope that you are doing well. And as always, you're